in miniature, copyright 2009 by Aaron Clooney. Kenta's hands shook a little as he pulled the key out of his pocket and put it in the lock. Toward the end of each workday, he'd start to wonder how Chidori, his 520 series, had fared, whether she'd be all right left alone for 10 hours or so. It wasn't that long ago that there'd been a recall on pet food that caused kidney failure. At first he didn't see Chidori, but when he tapped on the side of the cage, she came out from around the corner where she must have been sleeping. She looked like a 17-year-old girl, or at least a caricature of one. She was a mere 16 centimeters tall, a little small even for a Chibiko. Nakagomi Genomics was very tight-lipped, but it was rumored that they used some kind of rodent as the base for the Chibiko's genetic structure. It would explain why, when he opened Chidori's house-slash-cage, she immediately scurried up his arm and into his collar, just like a mouse. Ikeda had 3, including an albino 73 series, and Tanaka had 30 or so of different types, each with custom-made matching school uniforms and a big model school to keep them in. For some reason, they never got along with Chidori. None of them were half as well behaved as her. Even though his friends kept pestering Kenta to buy more, Chibikos were coming down in price lately, Tanaka was intensely jealous of the fact that he could trust Chidori to use her miniature toilet and even pull down her miniature panties. Tanaka's school looked great, but he had to clean it out at least once a week. When Kenta pulled out her hairbrush and tapped it on the desk, she made some little squeaking noises as she ran down his other arm. Her tiny face almost always looked like it was smiling, but he knew those sounds meant she was happy to see him. When she returned to the desk, she sat down, presenting her back to him. "Yes, of course I'll brush your hair." He gently ran the brush through her hair while she made delighted cooing noises. Sometimes she managed to get it tangled, but today not so much. He smiled, but he couldn't help but think it had already been almost a year since he'd impulse-bought her at the Tiger's Den in Akihabara. Chibikos were supposedly designed to last 3 years, 4 at the very most, not that anyone had yet seen a Chibiko die of natural causes yet, except maybe in a Nakagomi Genomics laboratory. He might have as much as 80 years ahead of him. Cats could last over a decade, but they weren't nearly as appealing. Sure, he could buy another 520 series, but there was only one Chidori. At least he hadn't bought a 510 series. They all had some kind of flaw that made them die within weeks. Cryogenically frozen 510 series had become a collector's item of sorts. Genetically engineered life forms were like that. When the brushing was done, he emptied the cage's waste container and refilled the food and water dispensers. Then he changed her clothes. This ritual was hardly necessary, but it was fun. Chidori's tiny naked body was very realistic, if a bit stylized. He stared at her for a moment, and she stared back up into his eyes, then put on her miniature pink pajamas. And in a couple years, she would be gone. Once Chidori was dressed, she walked around the desk while he went through his usual routine of checking his mail and news feeds. There was a message from Ikeda. Apparently the gang was getting together for dinner. Tanaka had found some new sushi place that he was absolutely convinced the three of them must visit. Ikeda and Tanaka had planned to meet at the restaurant at 7. From the directions and map that Ikeda had sent, the place was tucked away on the outskirts of Akihabara. 7 o'clock meant he didn't have all that much time to spare. He fed Chidori a couple of treats just in case, and changed her clothes to a miniature maid uniform. As usual, Kenta put on his flannel with a special pocket and carefully put Chidori in. He didn't necessarily like taking her out in public, but after all, he was hanging out with his fellow Chibiko enthusiasts. For now, she was content to sit still and enjoy his body warmth. One of the nice things about his apartment was that he only had to walk 5 minutes and switch trains once to get to Akihabara by JR. While he was on the Yamanote line, a young woman sat down next to him. He avoided looking at her. It was impossible to pretend that you were alone on a JR train in central Tokyo, but he was very accomplished at not looking at any particular person while still being aware of where he was. Still, he caught sight of her reflection in the opposite window. She was wearing tight black pants and a blouse, and had a dull orange duffel bag at her side. His brain didn't take in any of the details of her face. When Chidori poked her head out of his pocket, he was dimly aware of his neighbor turning her head. Was she looking? He gently rubbed the top of Chidori's head with one finger so that she disappeared from view, and when his stop came, he stood up and got off without looking at that woman. Akihabara Station was exactly the same as when he'd come here 3 days ago, though it had changed a few times since he started coming here at the age of 12. Akihabara itself changed much more rapidly, with at least one store closing or opening every few months, not to mention the endless, pointless cycle of the seasons. Right now it was summer, so the sky was clouded and the air was uncomfortably warm and damp. Sushi Musume was located on the top of a narrow 8-story building that was wedged into one of the back corners of Akihabara. Tanaka and Ikeda greeted him at the door with a wave, and Tanaka unceremoniously led the way inside. It looked more like an automated bistro than a sushi restaurant, with low, isolated tables and lighting so dim that the far walls disappeared into darkness. They sat themselves around a black plastic table in chairs made of black plastic and silvery aluminum. As soon as they sat down, the table lit up, displaying a menu in front of each of them. It must have been a touchscreen, too, because Tanaka quickly started tapping away. "Since you guys have never been here before, I'll order some stuff to get us started." In a few seconds, a waitress brought a hot tea and cold beer, 3 of each. "Now," announced Tanaka, "does anyone have any news from the world of Chibikos?" Without quite giving them a chance to reply, he launched into one of his own little lectures. "The latest is that supposedly Nakagomi Genomics actually made males, and now they can just breed them, so the production costs have gone way down." Ikeda gawks. "Are you serious?" Tanaka nodded sagely. "It's just a rumor at this point, of course. But a stable breeding population is the holy grail of that industry, right? Cloning costs more, and even for natural organisms, at least a third of your stock is going to die. Granted, they neuter with the ones they sell most of the time. They've been doing that with customized cats and dogs for ages now. It's just a matter of time before genetics firm in, say, China, Russia, or India starts producing knockoffs. Honestly, I'm surprised it's taken this long." Kenta tended to get a bit lost when they got into these discussions, so he smiled and nodded like usual and sipped his tea. Tanaka shook his head. "Not really. Nakagomi Genomics is good at protecting their trade secrets, and the external appearance they managed to create with the Chibikos is not an easy thing to achieve. Just giving a cat a certain kind of coat can be a massive project with countless failures along the way. Genetic engineering isn't nearly as predictable as people seem to think. You put the genes from one organism that you think will get the result you want into another and see what happens. Sometimes it works out fine, sometimes you come up with something you can use to move forward towards your goal, and entirely too often the thing just dies." Ikeda nodded and changed the subject. "Oh, and the other thing I heard on 2Channel's Chibiko board is that Nakagomi is going to be discontinuing some models and introducing a bunch of new ones. Basically a first-year anniversary kind of thing to drum up more sales before the fiscal year ends." Kenta inhaled a little bit of his tea. They rolled their eyes through his coughing fit and drank more beer. When he recovered enough, he asked, "Does that include the 520 series?" Tanaka set down his heavy glass beer mug. "Yup, all the 500s are getting the axe." So there would never be any more 520 series again. Even if you bought another Chibiko, it would be nothing like Chidori, even genetically. The 700 series and on involved a lot of new genetic material. That's when the waitress, whom Kenta dully noted was actually an android, set a large platter on the table. Tanaka must have seen her coming because he had his chopsticks ready to swoop down on the platter and grab a piece of sushi. Kenta saw a few ordinary cucumber rolls and tuna rolls in front of him, and he had a tuna roll halfway to his mouth when he saw what it was that had disappeared into Tanaka's mouth. That sushi roll had a tiny hand sticking out of it. Ikeda had one too. When they chewed, countless tiny bones made awful, tiny, crunching sounds. He barely noticed when the tuna roll plopped into his lap. Tanaka and Ikeda raised their eyebrows at him in unison. Ikeda swallowed and picked up another piece. "What?" Kenta gagged and just stopped himself from throwing up. "You're eating..." Tanaka picked up another piece in his chopsticks, nigiri sushi, naked Chibiko torso with dead eyes on a pat of rice. He didn't want to think about how it would sound, Tanaka's fat jowls moving up and down. His hand went to Chidori. She was still there in his pocket, asleep. Ikeda rolled his eyes. "I guess I should have mentioned not to bother bringing her along, but you're really overreacting." Tanaka chewed the food, part rice and part Chibiko corpse, still in his mouth.
So what? You don't mind eating cows or pigs or fish, but cats and dogs and Chibikos are a problem for some reason?"
He drank another swig of beer and added,
"I mean, it's not like I went for the live stuff."
Kenta couldn't think of anything to say. He just got up from the table and left the restaurant. Instead of taking the elevator down, he took the stairs up. The roof was flat and gray and dirty, with air conditioning vents spewing air even more damp and tepid than the rest that surrounded him. He walked to the railing, leaned against it, and shivered in the wind. Akihabara stretched out in front of him, lights burning bright in the night. If he jumped, he would almost certainly die. It would be in the news, but ultimately no one would really care. If he jumped with Chidori, maybe they'd call it a lover's suicide. Even if they remembered the incident, they'd immediately forget his name. Just when he was leaning over the edge, Chidori poked her head out of his pocket,
He gave a small, wordless squeal and jumped back from the railing. He hurried down all 7 flights of stairs. The stairs ended at by the back entrance, which led him out into an alley behind the building. He leaned against the wall and retched. His eyes burned and his saliva tasted foul. He'd nearly lost her. Too often, when Kenta stood outside his apartment, he imagined coming in to find Chidori in her cage, not moving or breathing, and there'd be nothing he could do about it. Nothing at all. Other times he'd worried that she'd get out of her cage and find some way to hurt herself. Again, he was reminded of the story of the old American woman who tried to dry off her beloved pet dog in the microwave. His throat tightened every time he imagined that dog spinning around and around, crying out as it cooked on the inside, and the batty old woman crying because her doggie wouldn't move anymore. Stupidity is easy. "Are you okay?" The voice might go away if he ignored it, but he couldn't count on that. "Fine, I'm fine." He smelled cigarette smoke. He was not in the mood to talk to this woman. She exhaled smoke through rounded lips. "You don't look like you're fine. Hey, didn't I see you on the train?" He looked up. He didn't recognize her face, but he had the same general shape as the woman who sat next to him. She was wearing a maid uniform now. The cigarette made her look like an ordinary woman. "Is that one of those Chibiko things?" He nodded. Chidori was peeking out again. The woman petted the top of Chidori's head. "A lot of my customers have them these days." "You work in a maid cafe?" Why was he talking to her? "Akane-chin, around the corner. I'm on break." Her cigarette breath made his stomach lurch again. "You must take good care of her, huh? In that uniform, she looks like a miniature version of me." "That sushi musume place is disgusting," was all he had to say. "Oh, I know. That's why it's so popular with otaku. You've no idea what you're talking about." She took a step back and put the cigarette to her lips. She shook her head with half a cigarette still in her mouth, then took it out and exhaled more vile smoke. "No, no. I don't have to work in this town. I could make a lot more at a hostess bar if I wanted. We all like being worthless perverts." Switched to must have been the voice she used with her customers, simpering, cute, and bubbly. "That way we can feel special and not think about death all the time." He walked past her and started plodding towards the train station. She flicked her cigarette away and called after him. "Come by sometime. I'm there most weekdays." And gently, carefully, Kenta pulled Chidori out of his pocket. Her heartbeat was small and far too fast. He cupped her in his hands and felt sick and wanted time to stop. It didn't.